2696, Lewis Family Farm versus Adirondack Park.
Ms. Sharon?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. I could ask for 2 minutes, so you can go ahead.
2 minutes?
Yes.
Yes, please.
The issue of Main Street consolidated cases involves the enforcement of the permit requirements in the APA Act and the Wild Scenic and Recreational River System Act, which I'll refer to as the APA Act. Those acts state in very plain language that a private landowner has to obtain a permit from the APA before commencing to construct a single-family dwelling in land that, like the land here, is classified as resource management land or is in a recreational river area. This is a fundamental aspect of the APA's jurisdiction. But Lewis Farm argues, and the court below held, that if the landowner intends to use these new single-family dwellings to house farm workers, he doesn't have to apply for a permit. Because in that case, the new single-family dwellings are agricultural use structures, which generally are exempt from the permit requirements of the Act. That's the wrong conclusion for two main reasons. Number one, single-family dwellings and agricultural use structures are mutually exclusive definitions. They're separately defined. There's no overlap. And secondly, creating this exception to the general permit requirement for single-family dwellings, if a farm worker lives in them, will give rise to a whole host of loopholes that will threaten the, that will undermine the law and will threaten and hamper the enforcement of the Act. Beginning with the statutory and regulatory language of the APA Act and the Rivers Act. Agricultural use structure and single-family dwelling, as I said before, are separately defined. Single-family dwelling is defined in Executive Law 80258. It is a detached building containing one dwelling unit, not including a mobile home. It houses people. And it doesn't matter if those people are farm workers or not. If a structure falls within the statutory definition of single-family dwelling, it keeps that classification regardless of who lives in it. Agricultural use structure is also separately defined in 802A of the Executive Law. It's a barn, a stable, a shed, a silo, or any other building or structure directly or customarily associated with agricultural use. There are two different types of structures. They're separately defined and there isn't any overlap. I want to talk for a minute about the principal building concept.
Well, isn't that what we have here, another building or structure directly and customarily associated with agricultural use?
Well, the court below actually found that this was a kind of an unprecedented use of single-family dwellings, that it is not customary for single-family dwellings to be used to house farm workers. But that aside, our position is that it's just not a reasonable interpretation of that language when you have a specific definition of single-family dwelling, and this structure more precisely fits into that dwelling.
That's not what the Court of Appeals said, but had to interpret this, I believe, identical term of the Agricultural Markets Act, correct?
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor, it was not an identical term, and that's important to realize. This is the Lysander case. And Lysander's not controlling here.
I understand it's not controlling, but the reasoning seems to me to have some relevance in terms of the issue that we have to decide.
In Lysander, the court was interpreting a very different term, Your Honor. It was interpreting the term farm operation in the Ag and Markets Law. That's not a term that appears anywhere in these two acts. And that term is specially defined in the Ag and Markets Law to include on-farm buildings that contribute to the production of crops.
So these farm workers, these buildings are used, there isn't any dispute about that, for housing people who are going to be working on the farm, advancing the harvest or whatever they have to do in terms of the products that are produced, the agricultural products produced on the farm. Is that correct?
I don't know how they're being used or how they're actually going to be used, but it was represented that the houses were built, some to house employees, some to house students from a nearby university who were learning about farming, some to host Nepalese farmers who were visiting to learn about the methods of organic farming. All not necessarily employees, mind you, but that was what was represented as the proposed use of these new single-family dwellings.
Is this a matter of pure statutory?
To the extent that the language is clear, and we think it is in this case, yes, it is a matter of statutory construction. because the language is so clear, you need to rely on any kind of deference. But I would submit that to the extent that there are environmental concerns at play here, that is within the scope of the APA's expertise. And to the extent that those concerns are implicated in this case, there may be some deference that should be afforded to their determination in this case. Dormitory type of structure would probably fall within the definition of multiple family dwelling, and it would require a permit. That would require a permit under section 810.2(b)(6). Will be a Class B project because it's not listed as a primary or secondary compatible use in this mansion at all. And if it's not listed as primary or secondary, it's automatically a Class B project requiring a permit. So a multiple family dwelling would indeed require a permit if it's going to be used to house whomever, as would a mobile home, apparently, as would a single family dwelling, regardless of whom it houses. I want to discuss for a minute the concept of principal building, which gave rise to some confusion by the court below, and it's the basis of Lewis Carman's argument here. Principal building is defined in the Act to determine whether a proposed use or development of land comports with density guidelines, how many structures per square acre or per square mile you can have. The density guidelines differ for different areas of the park, different land use areas. In these resource management land use areas, you can have 15 principal buildings per square mile. That's about one principal building per 42 acres. And principal building is defined as a single family dwelling, a mobile home. You can have one single family dwelling for every 43 acres of resource management land. But the APA Act in section 802.50G provides a special exception when it comes to farms and agricultural uses. It says that all agricultural use structures and single family dwellings that are occupied by the farmer or his employees are counted together. They're one principal building. And Lewis Farm argues that means that because they're treated together for density purposes, they're treated the same for all purposes under the Act, and that is not the case. The density requirements don't even come into play until after you have a project that requires permitting. You apply for a permit because it's a single family dwelling. And then in order to determine whether the single family dwelling to be proposed comport with the density guidelines, you look to the definition of principal building. And the way the principal building definition is crafted in the statute, we think supports the APA's interpretation, because it clearly distinguishes between single-family dwellings occupied by the farmer or his employees and agricultural use structures. It identifies them as separate. If agricultural use structure encompassed all farm housing, there wouldn't be any need to state it separately.
Counselor, you have a couple minutes left. Do you want to say those?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, thank you. Jacob Lamy, my associate, who is on the brief with me this afternoon. Your honors, yes, this is purely a question of law. In our system of justice, perhaps the greatest and most honorable duty of the court is to answer questions of law, pure questions of law, when imposed by people. Here, the entire farming community of the state asks this question of the court. Do the farmers have the same right to farm, the same protections against land use regulation inside the Adirondack Park, that they hold and cherish and are protected by lysander outside the park? The court below, Justice Meyer, said after careful scrutiny and a scholarly analysis was assiduously avoided here by Helen, concluded unquestionably that the answer is yes. Farms are exempt from virtually all land use regulation inside the park, and I think that was conceded here today that certainly all agricultural use structures inside the park are exempt from all regulation if they come within that definition. That means pink barns in the middle of a field of any size. That means neon silos 180 feet tall That means manure piles. That means fermenting silage under a white tarp with tires on it. That means every single structure or thing or use on a farm is exempt from regulation inside the Adirondack Park until the appellant comes before this court today and with a crammed reading of one definition suggests an inappropriate reading of the Act. Where is the legislative intent? In 1969, this state decided to amend our Constitution to protect and conserve farm soil and directed every agency to engage in regulation consistent with a policy that promotes the development of farming. In the wake of that, the legislature passed the Right to Farm Law in the Ag and Markets Law that was administered by the commissioner here in this case, albeit ignored by the appellant in its draft reading of the statute. Specifically, Section 308.4 of the Ag and Markets Law provides in its title, Right to Farm, that the commissioner can make findings that are final and binding as to whether or not the farmer is engaged in sound agricultural practices and whether or not the use of the land is agricultural. And here, in the record, at page 1389, the commissioner found that this use of the land by the Lewis family farm, by Barbara and Sandy Lewis, is an agricultural use of the land, that it is a common farm practice to house workers on the farm, that it is necessary to a successful farm, particularly given the housing shortage and the vacation market in the Adirondacks, where these American heritage farmlands are found. In the face of that right to farm finding, how can it be that the legislature intended a contradiction on the law? How are the people to absorb it? We have a final decision under 308.4 that this is an agricultural use of the land. And with a crabbed reading of agricultural use structure that ignores the flush paragraph that Your Honor pointed out, the flush phrase that says any building or structure directly or customarily associated with agricultural use is part of the definition of agricultural use structure, assiduously ignored. How could it be said that the legislature intended this court to ignore those words, contrary to Justice Reed's directive in the Friedman case that every single word must be parsed and given meaning, and every single word must be harmonized with the rest of the statute and the rest of state law? They're not mutually exclusive definitions by any stretch.
Can I ask you about that, though? Looking at the statute, it indicates any barn, stable, shed, silo, garage, fruit and vegetable stand, or other building or structure. Now, when you construe a statute, for that type of language, doesn't for other building and structure usually refer back to the same type of building, barn, stable, shed, silo, so on?
Not here, Your Honor, because the structure of the statute, the architecture of it is perfect. Structure is defined. Structure is a defined term under the Adirondack Park Act. Structure is defined to include single-family dwelling. So clearly, as the court below found, as a matter of pure statutory interpretation, any building or structure, including farm, worker, housing, which is included in the definition of structure, that's directly and customarily associated with agricultural use can be an agricultural use structure. And the legislature thought about farm worker housing when it wrote the Act. In the very provision that was just cited by counsel, where they said, okay, here's the land use plan. We must administer the park in such a way that the resource management lands are sparsely populated. And what did they say? They said, except for farm worker housing.
I want to ask, sir, if accepting your argument, is the park agency allowed to in any way regulate or confine the density? Or, I mean, how many, is there any limitation at all then, if your position is upheld, that the park agency can minimize density?
No, Your Honor. There's absolutely no limitation whatsoever, given our Constitution, given the right to farm, and given the purpose of managing the resource management lands to maintain open space. What the legislature said was, we're not going to count those farm worker houses, no matter how big they get, no matter how successful that farm is. Let them grow, let them build, because that protects open space. So there's no at all constriction on that, and it was purposeful. As the court said in Lysander, when you have a broad statutory exception, as here for all agricultural use structures, as I pointed out, that exception is to be read broadly unless the legislature specifically says that that a particular thing is excluded from that broad safe harbor. If you look at the town of Lysander case, just before the court decided that matter, the legislature changed the definition of farm building and took farm worker housing out of the definition. The court held that even though it had been taken out because of the broad language of the definition of farm building, which is essentially the same as agricultural use structure, we can't expect the legislature to have been inconsistent in that regard. That when you have that broad exception, unless the legislature specifically says except farm worker housing, you have to include it within the safe harbor. That's how you read the statute. That's how you harmonize it. That's how you read life into the exception. And therefore here, the proper reading was, as it was read below by His Honor Justice Meyer. And I have to ask, you know, one, this court has a strong tradition of paying respect to the considered judgment of the trial bench. One fair and resourceful approach to answering the pure legal question before this court is to read that decision that's now published. Is there a single flaw in it? Is there any reasoning that's in error? None is pointed out in the appellant's brief. Instead, they go back to the original effort to maintain mutual exclusivity between two definitions that clearly overlap.
One of the things, maybe I'm just being too practical, but one of the things that I can't find anywhere in the record is, while your client may have gone to the town of Essex zoning officer and asked about a permit, and in that conversation asked whether or not any proof from APA was, and even as I understand, the town didn't say no. Why didn't they go to the APA directly and ask them whether or not there was a permitting process that applied to this?
Ultimately, there was a discussion with the APA after construction had started.
Why didn't they do it initially?
There was no reason to suspect that there was jurisdiction given what the town code enforcement officer had said. In every single town in this state, when town code enforcement officers go to zoning seminars, they're taught about license. He thought he was right, and he was.
Terry, you have about 30 seconds.
I would ask also that in parsing the trial court's reasoning, I would ask also that you look at the formidable brief provided by the Farm Bureau that submitted to this court as a friend of the court. And there are also, the Farm Bureau is found representing 30,000 farmers throughout the state, that this is a fair and reasonable reading of the statute. We ask this court to answer the question before you, yes. The studied and careful approach of the court below is correct. Yes, in accordance with the approach in Lysander, we must include farm worker housing in the safe harbor. And the answer is yes, to save the Park Act and the Rivers Act from constitutional infirmity. The court below didn't have to reach the Constitution because, as he pointed out, the strict reading of the statute clearly includes
Thank you. Your Honors, the Lewises were well aware that the APA had jurisdiction over their property. They had prior dealings with the APA. They had previously been found in violation of the Act for wetlands violation. And in fact, the APA had visited the farm at the invitation of Mr. Lewis and told him that if he plans to build a single-family dwelling, his house finally would be part of frame. He claims to not recall the conversation, but it is what it is. And if the Lewises weren't sure, if they needed a permit, like Your Honor noted, they had a lot of ways to find out. There were very simple ways to find out. There is a four-page jurisdictional inquiry form available on the website, the UK website. You check boxes, you submit it, it's about a week or two turnaround time, and it produces a legally binding opinion as to whether or not a proposed project requires a permit. Lewises didn't pursue that option. In fact, they submitted a permit application to the APA. It just wasn't complete. And when the APA asked them to complete it, the APA said the missing information was never forthcoming.
Ms. Sheridan, can you claim any legal error in the decision of the court?
Yes, to the extent that it holds that a single-family dwelling occupied by a farm worker is an agricultural use structure.
Just that they, your position is that the court did the statutory construction improperly.
The statute, yes. And there's nothing arbitrary and capricious about the determination of the APA in this case. So the entire petition should be dismissed.
Am I correct? This said something, I don't need to go on, but you said something about permit method being a preliminary permit application made. Are you referring to the application dated March 14th, 2007, titled Minor Permit Project Application?
Yes, I'm not sure that was the exact data, but yes, they did submit a minor permit application.
And this was submitted by the Lewises to APA?
It was signed, I believe, by Barbara Lewis to the APA. And identified the proposed project as the construction of three new single-family dwellings. Now, it was identified by her as a minor project, which is a statutory term that deals with...
Does the record reveal why the application was not fully submitted after it was determined that the information...
I can't answer that question, Your Honor. All I know is that the APA asked additional information that was never provided.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. Who's the next person?